Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We have been doing the ramp up to the Super Bowl show with Jay Cicero for a couple of times and several times now leading up to this big event. And it's right there looming on the horizon. And Jay joins us this morning. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell. I appreciate you having me on.
Jay, Super Bowl 59. How many days now?
I purposely did not look at the countdown clock this morning. I know it's more than 20 and less than 30. How about that?
Michael Heck and I were having a little fun at your expense yesterday about or Wednesday about that matter. It's close. And I guess when restrictions start going in, I got to imagine anxiety starts rising a little bit, right?
Well, it does. And certainly, road closures and security and all that are extremely important to the overall planning for Super Bowl. And, there are going to be significant closures around the dome and some of the special event venues. And those will be out soon so people can make their plans.
Yes. So where are we? I mean, we know that the NFL's here in a big way. I'm sure that federal assets are here as well because of the SEER 1 rating that we've enjoyed with Super Bowls for a long, long time. What other activities are going on at the present time?
Well, I think you can see at the beginnings of the decor program that the NFL and host committee have been working on for quite some time, but there's iconic buildings. Of course, the Superdome. You can see on the fascia of the Superdome, the decor starting there, the Montreal Convention Center, and other downtown buildings are being wrapped with large scale NFL branded artwork with team logos, Super Bowl imagery, and a little bit of a New Orleans flair to all that. So it kind of gets you excited when you start to see it. I saw the street pole banners are going up also. But some of the most important decor is certainly going to lean towards the lighting of the St. Louis Cathedral, the Cabildo and the Presbytery, as well as the lighting around the Superdome. It's going to be incredible and fun.
And obviously, you have your finger on what's happening in the city from an economic standpoint. I'm hearing nothing but great positive things from the hotel industry, the tourism industry. I guess there is the possibility. It all comes down to what teams, I think, in some respect, where you get that final little oomph, that this could be a record setter for us.
It certainly could be. Most of the people that travel to Super Bowl are not necessarily the fans of the two teams. It's a highly corporate travel group that goes either every year or is part of an incentive program from NFL sponsors and vendors that they are work with. So Budweiser may be bringing their top 150 people from around the world. That certainly doesn't have anything to do with the two teams, who they are, but there may be fans of the two teams that that work with Anheuser-Busch that are important to travel or want to come along for that. And then you have the fans on top of that, the fans of the two teams. So, you know, it's an interesting blend of folks that attend, and there'll be fans that have come who don't have tickets to the game and will want to hang out in the French Quarter or their favorite bar or restaurant because they've been here for other events or they've been here on a convention for many times, and they know or they have family from Louisiana. So you just never know. And the two teams, obviously, it's going to be fun to see it end here and get down to the Final Four this weekend for both the two AFC and two NFC championship game teams are going to be finalized this weekend. And it's going to be interesting to see who wins and who comes and how it all takes place. But regardless, it's going to be a dramatic economic impact no matter what.
Absolutely. And have y'all started kind of communicating with these teams already?
Well, the NFL is constantly communicating with the teams. We've got so much to do outside of the team piece of it. They will at some point in time, there will be, obviously advanced visits by the teams, to set up all that. So I'm sure the league is talking to them about, where, everything is going to be, how to prepare. And since it's been 12 years, since the Super Bowl has been here, even if the Ravens made it again, there's probably new folks that they'd be dealing with there. So it's always good to be communicating with them to make sure that they understand where they're going to be staying, what the, you know, where the practice sites are and things like that.
From my perspective, I think this is probably the best time to visit the city. I mean, you know, we had this horrific event on Bourbon Street. Obviously, it is a changer in many respects, even though that this event has the CR1 designation. It is a gut check, and I'm curious. I'm sure that you guys have had internal conversations about this with federal authorities and others. Do we expect any major differences to what we have typically seen in prior Super Bowls?
You know, that's a great question. I know we have certainly been talking internally and been talking with the security leads about what we as a host committee have to do for our events. And, anything suggested we're doing. Obviously, that is safety is extremely important to all of us. And so I do think, you know, there will be changes. What those changes will be as far as any more restrictions around the Superdome or Convention Center, that information will probably be coming out either today or on Monday as far as closures are concerned. But the, the exact plans, you being in that industry for however long, those plans are kept tight, and that information is only put out in waves that make sense to the general public. But there's a lot of planning that goes on behind the scenes, and a lot of work, a lot more work has taken place since January 1. And I know the NFL, as well as us at the host committee, are thinking about the victims and their families and, you know, how to do this the right way. I think we have a unique opportunity because the Super Bowl is here. To be able to honor folks who were heroes, to remember those who were victims and their families, and to hopefully use the platform of the Super Bowl to be able to tell that story in the right way and to make sure that the proper honoring is happening.
Absolutely. I mean, the plan is very dynamic. It's always changing depending on, you know, the level of intelligence that they have. And, you know, as a result of this incident here, they're looking hard at any number of things. And that's why I'm confident in saying it's probably going to be the safest time ever to visit New Orleans, if you want to come down.
Absolutely. I remember, if you remember, too, in 2002, how I sat in a lot of those meetings with y'all and all the other entities, the security entities that were planning. And look, those meetings are not for the faint of heart. But
they were not.
But you knew the planning and the expertise that was at the table and that had gone into what we were doing. And that day, I knew the Superdome in New Orleans were the safest place on the planet for Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. You haven't heard any pushback or anything. I mean, what I'm hearing is the confidence level is there from all, on all fronts.
Absolutely. No pushback. Everybody's working together. And just having a Super Bowl is enough of a purpose to bring everybody together and to do these things like only New Orleans can do. But, you know, the events of January 1 really give it a whole new personal purpose to everyone. And I know they take a lot of pride in what the security forces take a lot of pride in what they do.
So, Jay, a lot of people, you know, kind of mistakenly view it as a 4-hour, 5-hour game, you know, on a Sunday evening, and that's about it. But, I mean, the activities start well in advance, probably, easy to say, at least 10 days in advance of the game itself throughout the city, right?
Absolutely. We spoke about a minute ago, the building wraps are going up. There's the cathedral lighting project will take place at Jackson Square starting Sunday, February 2nd at 6:30 p.m. And it is an incredible visual mapping, light mapping of projected onto the cathedral, the cabildo, and the presbytery. Those shows will take place every 30 minutes. And there'll be some music that goes along with it. And I think people, Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris just did the same thing, and they're reopening. And I think it's going to feel like that here on these historic buildings. And that coincides with what Mrs. Benson is doing in her fundraising to help renovate the cathedral. And so all of this kind of has come together. And that Mrs. Benson has this cathedral renovation program, a fundraising program. The Super Bowl is coming. The NFL wants to participate in this special lighting program. You know, all of that, and it's very expensive to do. Very expensive to do overall. So all that has come together in convergence at one time.
And, you know, so many activities at the convention center, then Guy Fieri's got a big program going. Other businesses have big programs going throughout that week. The governor's got a big event in a location down on Convention Center Boulevard. There's so much happening. It's almost like a Mardi Gras atmosphere.
It really is. And the only parade that will be taking place will be the host committee parade that weekend. But it is somewhat Mardi Gras-ish as far as business. It's a business Mardi Gras. I guess that's a great way to describe that, to think of it. That cathedral lighting is supported by Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, the Public Foundation, and New Orleans and Company to help offset some of the costs there. The NFL participates in that, too. And there's going to be a number of Shaq has his event. Guy Fieri has his event. There's a number of celebrities that have their events, whether or not they're inside venues or part of other events that are going on downtown. It's going to be very interesting and very fun. I encourage as many people to come downtown and witness all of this, because, you know, it's been 12 years since the last time that we hosted Super Bowl, and these are, I wouldn't say it's once in a lifetime, hopefully not once in a lifetime, but these special events and special lighting and everything else that's happening, special decor, it's really something to take in.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, a lot of people who have, and Michael and I, and I know you know this because you participated in the conversation as well about all the things that we've been doing in preparation for the Super Bowl. People ask the question, why? Well, all you need to do is watch TV, because the advertising for the Super Bowl and the visions and the scenes and the landscape of the city being repeatedly shown on television commercials, radio ads, and otherwise has already started. And we don't even know who the two teams are, but it's already started.
You're right. And Fox has a 5-hour lead into the game. I mean, so
yeah,
their effort. And look, we've been meeting with the Fox people for 2 years now, and then they are working with local group, the Solomon Group, to do all their a lot of their production stuff here, handling everything for them, but. They love New Orleans. They love how unique it is. And Fox is kind of one of those, they have the same aspect of their broadcast and their station as New Orleans. They're more fun. They're more lighthearted. They make fun of each other on their pregame broadcast with Howie Long and Terry and all those guys, Kurt Menefee, et cetera. They have a great time, and that's what New Orleans is all about. So I think having Fox here this year is pretty unique in that way. And these media opportunities from the 6,000 credentialed members of the media that will be here all week is something that's hard to put a dollar value to.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think we have radio stations in all of the – yeah. I'm almost positive. We have radio stations in every one of the teams that are still in right now. And I'm sure they're communicating with our folks here, right, in order to help and provide support for them when they come down to broadcast the game, which is kind of interesting, too. You know that you have all of these connections that you just don't even think about.
Absolutely. I mean, it is the largest corporate business travel event that moves around the country every year. And certainly people get extremely excited about that. And it's just, people love to come to New Orleans. We know that. The media said that over and over again to us when we were in Las Vegas last year. And we've known that for a long time. But everyone thinks that and knows that New Orleans is the best city to host this. And what makes it so special is our unique culture. Certainly the ability to walk everywhere is a big item in our favor. But the history of Super Bowl in New Orleans is something, and our culture is something that we as a host committee have leaned into since day one. And I think you're going to see a lot of that over the next 3 to 4 weeks.
You know, a lot of folks, even locals, there's a lot of curiosity about our city, right? And I'll say it again, no better time than to satisfy that curiosity than right now. Because there's going to be a lot of free shows available to you, and you'll be able to see New Orleans at its best.
And affordable shows at that. I mean, you're right.
Yeah.
The cathedral and the lighting program down is free. The parade is free. The Super Bowl experience at the convention center is $20 for adults on Wednesday, Thursday, and I think Friday and Saturday it's $40. Kids under 12 are free. And then opening night at the Caesars Superdome, That takes place from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., and both teams will be on the field doing interviews with media. And that you'll be able to not only see the players up close, but you'll be able to hear some of the media interviews that are happening. So obviously they have one team on come on first, and then for a couple hours, and then the next team comes on later, right after that. But it's just really something so special. And New Orleanians are huge football fans. We're obviously all Saints fans, but huge football fans. And we just encourage everybody to come and have take part of these affordable ways to see and be a part of the Super Bowl.
Jay, not to put any pressure on you, but I'm getting a lot of texts. Please ask Jay, when is it possible for us to have the next Super Bowl?
Well, believe me, we talk about it all the time. We have to work around Mardi Gras dates and other conventions that are here in town and already booked. The New Orleans and Company does a tremendous job of booking these conventions, and some of them are 13, 15 years away from now. So finding the right opportunity that where Mardi Gras lands and the dates for future Super Bowls is always a challenge for us. But now hosting our 11th one, we've obviously worked around that. So we're looking at it, and we're talking to the league as we talk to the NBA about the All-Star Game. We talk to WWE about WrestleMania. We talk to the NCAA about the men's and women's Final Fours and other major events that we work with our partners here to attract and manage. So we're constantly trying to get these events here, and then when we do land them, it's our job to go raise all the money necessary to do everything we said we're going to do in a bid, and then to operationally execute every requirement in the bid.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We know that you're incredibly busy. We wish you all the success in the coming days as we get closer and closer and closer. But next time I talk to you, I really want you to know how many days out that we are, if you could remind me of that. I would appreciate it.
I'll be sure and do that research before I get on the call with you.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Newell. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Jay Cicero, President and CEO of the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation. They put on the R&L Carrier New Orleans Bowl, and they are the host committee for the New Orleans Super Bowl as well. A lot of work goes into that, I'm telling you, in a long period of time. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll visit with Bruce Klingner, Senior Research Fellow, Asian Studies Center at the Heritage, talking about South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. He became the first sitting South Korean president to be arrested and was taken to the Seoul Detention Center after refusing to cooperate. We'll talk about what all of this means and how did we get to this point when we return. Stay with us.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's been a lot of political unrest in South Korea, some crazy things going on there. And if you haven't been paying attention to it, you probably should, because it's very important. It's a very important ally to the United States and to stability in Southeast Asia. And here to talk to us about it is Bruce Klingner, Senior Research Fellow, Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. Bruce, this kind of was not on my radar, and as I began to read more and more about it, some very troubling circumstances and movements going on in South Korea.
Very much so, and it really came as a surprise even to longtime Korea watchers. I had been in Seoul about 2 weeks before President Yoon declared martial law, and in my meetings with government officials, no one said, hey, what you really need to be worried about or concerned with is the president becoming increasingly frustrated with the opposition party in their Congress, which the opposition has a majority. So it was quite a surprise. What happened was President Yoon, the South Korean president, declared martial law on December 3rd. And he, in his remarks, it was that there was this national emergency, that pro-North Korean forces were threatening democracy. And yet when he actually released the official decree, it became clear it really was just frustration with an obstructionist opposition party. But they do have a majority in their single house National Assembly. So that's the price of democracy. It's frustrating, but it's democracy. So it really doesn't meet the test of what would be required for actually declaring martial law. He sent troops and police to prevent their congressmen from voting on rescinding the national law, which is allowed under the Constitution. So he called martial law for insufficient reasons, and then he tried to prevent their Congress from, according to their constitution, from voting against it. So in return, the National Assembly impeached him, and we're now waiting on the Constitutional Court to see if they uphold or reject the impeachment motion. If they uphold it, then he's already lost his powers, but he would be formally removed from office. And then within 60 days, South Korea would have a new election for president. In parallel with that, the opposition party has brought criminal charges against him for a number of what are really foreign policy decisions that they disagree with. So I think the president was wrong in calling out martial law, that the impeachment motion should be upheld. But the opposition party is overreaching itself. They're delving into political issues and trying to use those as justification for a criminal charge against the president. And what we've seen is the South Korean public's opinion of the both ruling and opposition party has really switched. The right after the martial law and impeachment, the president had very, very low public approval ratings, as well as his ruling party. And the opposition was in the 40% or so. Right now, because of a reaction against what's seen as overreach by the opposition, actually now the president has higher approval ratings than before the impeachment. And the ruling party is just a little bit higher than the opposition party, which has given the ruling party more confidence that they might actually win the special election. The president has been taken into custody. Right now, he's sitting in solitary confinement as they await the results of both the constitutional and the criminal cases. And right now, the opposition leader, who would be presumably their candidate for a presidential election, he's under five or so indictments for various criminal charges. So it really is a bizarre situation, to say the least.
Many aspects of this sound eerily familiar. I don't know how else to say it. But when he was elected, did I read somewhere that he won by 8/10 of 1%?
Yes.
Was that right?
Very, very close election. And then this past April, they had an election for the single House National Assembly, and the opposition won really by a landslide. So they have been obstructing the president's agenda and calling for numerous impeachments charges against the president, the first lady, as well as a number of cabinet officials. And that's what frustrated the president and led him to call martial law.
So that's the micro view. Macro, I mean, obviously there's a lot of unrest. There's issues going on in Japan. I mean, Southeast Asia right now seems to be a little bit of a mess. You throw some of the happenstances in Thailand in there as well. And I mean, it's not a stable picture.
No. And the thing was, just a few months ago, let's say, you know, as late as early September, you know, the U.S., South Korea, and Japan on their foreign and security policies were in very strong alignment. It was like three horses pulling very strongly, all in the same direction in the same harness. And the only questions were what would be the details of the U.S. foreign and security policies in the Indo-Pacific if President Trump was elected? Would he alter policies, and to what degree? And that was really the only question mark. Since then, Japan had a leadership change, which itself wasn't an issue. But then he called for a snap election going out to the public, thinking he would win, and that would give him a mandate to push back against any critics within his own party. Well, it went disastrously wrong. The public really rebuked the ruling party. They lost their majority in their legislature for the first time in 15 years. And now he's leading a minority government, and he has to go to the opposition for votes for any kind of legislation. So the Japanese ship of state's going in the right direction. It's still in the same direction, which is very much in alignment with U.S. strategic interests. But the sails are luffing. It's inefficient. It's, you know, as the captain has to put any issue to a vote to the crew. And then now you have South Korea, where if the opposition wins, they would pursue very different policies, very out of alignment with what both the outgoing and incoming U.S. administrations would like. They, in the past, have been very conciliatory towards China, North Korea, very antagonistic to Japan because of historic issues, which undermines the resurgence or the rapprochement in South Korean-Japan relations, which has enabled a much better trilateral security cooperation with the U.S. And then the opposition also has a more standoffish approach towards the alliance with the U.S. They've often blamed the U.S. instead of North Korea for raising tensions on the Korean Peninsula. So, you know, right now we have three ships of state where we're not sure what Mr. Trump's policies will be, if they'll be different from the past. Japan right now is the steady ship of state, and then South Korea may be veering off in a very different direction. So just when the Trump administration is coming in looking for, you know, strong, stalwart partners to address not only the North Korean, but the expanding China threat, we're facing a lot more uncertainty in the region.
We're visiting with Bruce Klingner, Senior Research Fellow, Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. Bruce, it's almost as if we're in, I guess this is safe to say, it's four different theaters, so to speak. I don't remember this much confusion and unrest in modern times. Would that be an overstatement?
Well, if we look at the Indo-Pacific, really the sort of the unifying theme is China being much more belligerent in really all the theaters or sub-theaters of the Indo-Pacific. And as China has grown in economic and military strength, it's really been throwing its weight around. It's very coercive, very intimidating towards its neighbors, including way down in Southeast Asia and Australia. And they've been so really blatant in their tactics that it has led to much better coordination and collaboration, including on economic cooperation to try to diversify from an over-reliance on trade with China, and then on security relationships. But now, just in the last few months, this turmoil, particularly in Northeast Asia, has thrown that, you know, really into a questionable, you know, issues as to how far collaboration will go in the future.
Well, I have to imagine that whatever preliminary thought process was going on in the Trump administration about what their approach would be diplomatically, going to have to change to some extent, right? I mean,
I think the
opposition party in South Korea is fairly radical.
Yeah. When I met with one of their congressmen who had served in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for many years, you know, he's saying that the party has changed in the last 2 years since the progressive president or liberal president left office, that they're not as radical as people perceive them to be, that the supporters of the previous president lost in the primaries before the April election. But most people don't think it's evolved that much. So really, there's a great deal of uncertainty or even concern about what policies they would pursue. So, you know, the Trump administration is coming in, and really there's a bipartisan consensus in Washington now of the need to confront the multifaceted and growing China threat. And we're looking for strong partners and allies in the region. And now, you know, some of those allies are a bit more questionable in which policies they will pursue or how effectively or strongly they'll be able to implement their policies.
And I guess China's looking at this as kind of another crack in a door, right?
Exactly.
Whatever. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then North Korea has been actually very quiet. They're just sort of sitting back and enjoying watching South Korea have this political turmoil, the even stronger partisanship than even just a month or so ago. So they just, you know, I think are, you know, adopting Napoleon's adage of never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. So North Korea is just watching South Korea kind of tear itself apart. You know, that said, the military, the U.S. and South Korean military, the intelligence communities, the State Departments are working very closely and, you know, maintaining a very watchful eye on North Korea to prevent them from trying to take advantage of it. But it's the question. So right now, when South Korea would want to engage with President Trump directly at the executive level, they're stymied in that. They have an acting president. And actually, after the President Yoon was impeached, they had an acting president who himself was impeached. So now you really have sort of a third-string president in an acting position.
I miss that in my readings. I don't even, it's like, man, we're going from bad to worse.
I mean, yeah, it's they've gone to the bullpen, you know, twice already. And the opposition has even threatened this second acting president with impeachment if he doesn't do what they want. So It's a pretty tumultuous time over there. You know, that said, it is very stable there. You may see photos of very large demonstrations, both pro and against the president. But they are very peaceful. They even pick up their trash after their demonstrations. I was in Seoul last week again, and it's very quiet. It's very stable. So it's not a question of the government being, you know, overthrown or violent demonstrations as occurred in past years in South Korea. It's very orderly, business as usual. It's just at the very top, you have this political battle between the president, the ruling party, and the opposition party.
Yeah, this will be interesting to see as this unfolds with the incoming administration, because I have to imagine there is some exigency to this, right, from a foreign policy perspective.
Right. So, you know, we're looking for, you know, partners to kind of get on board, you know, in pushing back against China, and different countries in the Indo-Pacific, they're, you know, more or less willing to do that. Sort of, you know, our allies have been increasingly concerned by China and more willing to do things, not only security cooperation, but trying to diversify business away from China, because China uses the fact that they are the largest trading partner for all the countries in Indo-Pacific as a way to intimidate them on political or diplomatic or security issues. But other countries, particularly in Southeast Asia, smaller nations, you know, they don't want to be forced to choose between
right.
sort of the security guarantor of the U.S. and then the biggest trading partner, China. So they've done a lot of fence sitting, trying to, you know, kind of wring their hands and say, we don't, you know, don't make us choose. And the U.S. is sort of saying, look, if you're afraid of taking action in your own interest because of fear of Chinese retribution, it shows you're in an abusive relationship and
yes.
should take steps to try to eliminate that or reduce that.
No doubt. Bruce Klingner, thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate your time and your insight. We'll be checking back with you as things progress here, because I think this is going to be a big challenge. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That's Bruce Klingner, Senior Research Fellow, Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. He's got a great piece that he wrote about this. You can just go to the Heritage site or just Google his name and you'll find it there. Breaking news, Trump's inauguration has moved indoors to the Capitol Rotunda. They're expecting temperatures of about 12 degrees, not counting the wind chill. So they are going indoors now on Monday. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Number of texts coming in talking about how we view China. And obviously we find ourselves in a little bit of a predicament, they say, because we haven't really treated them as the enemy that they are for us. And then as a result of our conversation with Jay Cicero, President and CEO of the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation, about the Super Bowl, folks are reminding our audience to support local businesses, even restaurants, during the Super Bowl weekend, because the large corporate sponsors that come in, they're having their own private parties. And some, you know, a number of restaurants are not as crowded as one would think. And I agree. In fact, we made lunch reservations at a restaurant down in the quarter. I just want to be down there, kind of watching, you know, observing. Don't have tickets to the Super Bowl. That's not a solicitation. Maybe. But but just wanted to be down there to catch the best of the city and what it has to offer. So we decided to go down there with some friends and visit and have a good time and kind of watch the yin and the yang of the two teams, you know, dogging one another down there, just taking in all of the Super Bowl experience, and have done that before. It's always a lot of fun to see that and to talk to folks. And, of course, you have to wear your Saints garb, right, so that they know that you are the Saints fan. And that stimulates a lot of interesting conversation as well. So think about that. Still an opportunity to get yourself some reservations down there and just kind of enjoy what's happening on a Sunday afternoon, Super Bowl day, in our city, the place we call home. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. When we come back after the top of the hour news break in the back half of the next hour, we'll visit with New Orleans City Council Member-at-Large J.P. Morrell. We'll talk about the court hearing relative to the Plaza Tower, about city contractors proceeding with preliminary work for demolition of the blighted skyscraper, and we'll also talk about Mardi Gras plans, and he'll give us some exclusives on changes to the routes for 2025 Mardi Gras season. And coming out of the break, we'll visit with the Louisiana Commissioner of Insurance, Tim Temple. He'll give us a general insurance update, auto insurance, and talk about the cold weather that's coming in next week as well. And we'll ask him about some of the challenges that they're having in California and whether or not that's going to have an impact on the reinsurance market.